Okay, so anyone who has left has left. That's good. So we can settle down again. Thank you so very much. I'm very happy that a slide from Falling Down the Stairs was shown. I was fortunate enough to see one of those performances at the Whitworth in 2009. It was incredible because Marina Abramovic was invited by the Manchester International Festival to curate some live art at the Whitworth. And the premise, which I thought was fantastic, because it's a really big museum full of great stuff, she emptied every single public gallery. And in each space, she gave a live artist that space to work in. And she picked really high caliber artists, and before you went into the space, she drilled you, which I was a little bit uncomfortable about, but it was a good thing. You yourself had to transition from the regular way you might be going around the world, doing your day, you know, being with the people you came with. And she basically asked you to change your mind state, to change your speed, to open up your senses. She made us, so this is all the audience, she made us look into each other's eyes for 5 minutes with complete strangers, really look. We then had a glass of water and we had to spend 10 minutes very slowly following Marina Abramovic, drinking the water. So, and then we were in the building for 5 hours. And you were allowed to leave, but the premise was don't leave. If I remember rightly, I think we all wore white coats. Did she give us... Yes, we all had to... You left your bags at a room in the front and then you got a white sort of science jacket on. Really interesting, subtle ways of allowing you to more fully integrate. And then knowing you're going to be there for 5 hours, and there was one room full of fruit and water if you just needed to replenish yourself. So all of us, to some degree, were working in a collaborative work of duration, but then of course the artists were very specifically working. And Kira's piece of falling down the stairs in slow motion doesn't even do it because it was imperceptible movements, was just really one of the strongest pieces of live art I've ever witnessed. It worked on so many registers. Yeah, absolutely powerful. And I kept going back to your piece the whole time. I'm very pleased to have us there at the end. Yeah, incredible piece of work. Anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to take over the floor, but I wanted to share that very visceral experience with you. And just to say that one of the things I was thinking about from the beginning was when you were saying about being younger and in London and dressing up and knowing how important that was to me. No, I was really glad to hear it. Because people don't tend to do that. I mean, an art student's don't tend to do it. There are no rules about this, and I'm not complaining or criticising, but I often do think, my God, my generation at art school, dressing up was a really big part of just being. It wasn't even done for art. And the question I was burning to ask was, well, just because we hit 50, do we have to stop doing that? And then just at that point, it was like, da-da! out came the dressing up, which was just superb and wonderful. Anyway, at this point, I shut up and I hand over to you guys. So let's, any questions you have that you'd like to ask Kira? We've got two people with mics, so we'll start over there.
It's only a quick question. The performance you did when you had the grits with the tiny cuts, what was that performance called?
Succour, but spelt S-U-C-C-O-U-R, as in help, to help.
And
it was like 2001 or something, I think.
And would you go back to doing something like that? Like, going back to being...
I don't think so. I think it's the moment's past. You know, it feels like these works have their own little epoch, their own time, and their own... speaking to a time and a space and a context, and I feel like the moment's passed, just as the moment will pass for rolling around and eggs and glitter. I mean, I don't actually roll around, I do some clever things. but it's funny that there seems to be a natural, a piece falls away and then something else demands. I mean, different pieces can coexist as well, but I can't imagine at the moment doing the cutting that particular piece that you're describing.
I was going to ask you, because I'm actually doing an essay on Frank Ruby at the minute, so it was just it's quite a bit of a coincidence, really.
Great. Yeah, and there's a very nice new book, Frank Ruby's autobiography, that's just come out. I'm going to plug books today.
And we'll definitely get your book for the library.
Oh, thank you. But Franco's book is really, really, really lovely. And he doesn't really work with blood anymore, but what he does do, I think, a lot is he has the same questions and ideas. So whether he's working with bleeding, or he works a lot with ceramics at the moment, you know, the same preoccupations pervade through the different media he works with, I think. Great person to write about.
Thank you. I've got two questions, one of which, if you don't know the answer to, that's perfectly fine. I'm also doing an essay on Frank Ruby in a minute, and I've just ordered the new book, Because of Love, which is great. And I was wondering, do you know whether they deliver to Germany?
Say that again, whether?
Do you know whether Lada deliver to Germany?
What, with the books?
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, right.
They do. They're really good. No, they do. No, funny enough, when my book came out, then Finn Love has got the best Instagram. Oh. Check out Finn Love's beautiful, wow, divine, most exquisite person. Anyway, Finn Love also does the books and said, oh, I've been sending your book all over the world. So yeah, Unbound are really good at, it's basically a fantastic online bookshop. And they'll post all over the place.
Great. Yeah. I'll make sure to get it.
Oh, that's so kind of you.
Yeah, because you're about to go on the exchange, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm going to
so. Get the library to get it, then you can look at it, you don't have to buy it.
The second part of my question was, you mentioned how being a female, that it would be portrayed in sort of three different eyes, as it would to Frank Ruby's, especially with a lot of his work being done around the time of sort of the height of HIV. Mm. What sort of reviews did you get back? Was there anything, I mean, I imagine there's a whole mix of things, but is there anything you particularly remember that stands out to you?
Oh God, there was quite a lot. Particularly with that piece with all the little cuts in the grid. Simon Kasson from Ducky wrote to me and said something like, he always calls me Kira Riley, he never calls me Kira. So something like, Kira Riley, that was great, punk rock, Victorian melodrama, never do it again. Which was fantastic. He wrote it to me, and actually the letter went in the book because it was so brilliant. I kept it for forever because it was like the ultimate Ducky letter. I remember Sophia LeCour, is that her name? Fantastic person who works with choreography and dance and theory. God, LeCouris? Oh God, I can't remember her name properly, that's awful. She had a point, I thought it was a really important point, quite a disturbing one, that she said to me in the bar after I performed, which was, she said something like, where I come from they do that, but there's torture. I thought what was important about what she said was this work shouldn't really be comfortable, this isn't comfortable work. I think it's work that can have lots and lots of, you know, lots of different ideas and reactions can coexist. And I'm really fond of the word ambivalent. I like ambivalence and I like confusion. And I also recognize for myself it's very important to feel that I can psychologically and emotionally allow lots of different responses to things to coexist in myself at the same time, not always to have a definitive opinion. And I feel like it's a piece of work that seeks those ambivalences or allows them to happen in the performance space. So, you know, some people found it very erotic. Some people found it just very fascinating thinking about, you know, what physicality is. I remember one woman said, you know, you're damaged now, you're damaged goods, basically, she said in a kind of condemning sort of way. Many different, I mean, I know for some people the works have been very strong and powerful, because often they're shown in very intimate settings as well, where people are quite close. Sometimes people have fainted. And I think sometimes people have found that they've been surprised that there's a delicacy in the work as well. There's a kind of daintiness almost. I'm trying to think about other responses. a kind of a beautiful seesaw between am I allowed to like this? Am I allowed to enjoy this? Am I allowed to find an image of a woman cutting herself up pleasurable? What if it does turn me on? Or what if it frightens me? What if it makes me angry? What if I... So I think these works do make all of us ask these questions, you know, like all sorts of artworks do though, don't they? You know, what is it, you know, at the moment I'm finding myself asking myself questions about, you know, why do I like John Wick movies with Keanu Reeves using the kind of guns that have just shot up school children in America? You know, I'm thinking, am I just part of that violent mentality because I find these Hollywood movies really entertaining? They're cartoon-like movies, but you know, I've just been kind of going through this questioning of myself, and the best I can do at the moment is to keep myself open rather than kind of going, this is all good, this is all bad, just to keep this energy inside me of questioning and curious and being ambivalent and also finding things ambiguous, where I can keep on going, okay, maybe don't shut it down yet, just keep going, keep going, keep going with these difficulties. So, I love how I work in John Wick though, that was really good. If any of you watch those movies, they're really fabulous. They're very fun.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Okay, another question over there.
So at the moment I'm kind of working on seeing if there's a link between psychic skin and the physical skin, kind of in psychoanalysis and performance. So like looking between links between skin therapy and performance or acting as a container. Sorry, you probably get asked this kind of thing all the time, I imagine. But I wonder if you might be able to talk about how, or actually even if, you kind of navigated that distinction between the form of puncture as performance and as self-harm.
Oh yeah, I do get asked that all the time.
I
don't know, I think the moment I seem to have a whole load of email inquiries around that as well from people who are writing a lot, and I find it quite a tricky one because I think these things is they're all on a spectrum of language, aren't they? They're all a communication. Self-harm is a communication, isn't it, of some kind, and cutting oneself as an art in an art action is also a communication of some kind. I suppose one difference I see, but I wouldn't want to say anything, I'm not qualified to say anything absolute in this, and I certainly couldn't talk for other people at all, and that would be very wrong of me to even think that I could do that. I think there are different questions. I think there are different ways to think about, you know, if someone is self-harming, then that's a language that perhaps... I don't know how to actually put into words what I want to. Something that happened a lot with my work at one point was people would call it self-harm, and then that would be like a full stop. This sort of sense of if you can name it, if you can pathologize it, this is like feminism 101. This is the mad woman in the attic stuff. If you can pathologize it, therefore it creates. It's like end of story. I've just named you as mad, and therefore bad. Because those two things are seen culturally as synonymous. So therefore, if I can call this action self-harm, then there's a whole lot of other implications. It stops the question of, but what's happening? What's the meaning? What's the story? What's the kind of, what's actually going on? Which is what, you know, classic psychoanalysis did as well. Let's assert a story here. We can tidy it up and end of story, you know, which of course Dora and whoever would kind of mess around with, and Anna or whoever. And that's why I became very interested in hysterics. I forgot to mention hysterics earlier, because I felt that they, whether they were proto-feminists or not, there was a kind of enactment of symptoms, a kind of hyper-symptomatic choreography, and I, you know, I mean, this has been written about by so many different people from different directions, but for me, at one point, I really wanted to think about them as almost acting out society's idea of what femininity, a certain kind of femininity in a certain kind of society, you know, we're only talking about one kind of society because I'm only thinking about one bit of history and one bit of the world, but I thought that was very, very interesting. When I was a student, Anthony Howe, who was the professor who taught me at the time, had written a book called The Psychoanalysis of Performance Art, and at the time there was also an MA at Brunel, might still be there, on psychoanalytic theory, and there was a lot of theorists using psychoanalysis to think about bodies and to think about these ideas of different, I don't know, because someone hasn't thought about any of that. But it was very fascinating and very charged and important. So I don't know, I mean, you have to answer that question really, don't you? So I just like to try and be as respectful as I can about that and to sort of not shut down the sense of, but what does it mean? If someone's self-harming, it's a conversation, but what's been said, what's been communicated, you know? The other thing that makes me a bit uncomfortable with any of the statements is it's kind of talking about, oh, you over there. It's this sort of othering that goes on that I feel a bit compromised by. It's kind of pointing and like, oh, you strange, different person. I feel uncomfortable with that as well. Does that help a little bit?
Yeah.
Thank you.
So questions this side, Jack? You feel like you're looking over here. I'm not missing anyone, am I?
Hello. I was just wondering if you could explain a little bit more about the comment about some of your movements not being like dance, but more sporty or self-defense or something.
Yeah, well, I didn't train any dance. I haven't trained in dance. And so I'm interested in dance, but it's probably something I have the most... I really grapple... Sorry, that's a bad pun. But I grapple with some of the histories and ideologies that perpetuate. I work in a theatre academy at the moment that's got a really strong dance and choreography program. And what seems to be lacking, and I might be wrong, I'm probably making a huge judgment, which is a big mistake. But what I often encounter is there isn't the same scrutiny of ideas around bodies, including that there isn't any kind of neutral body. Often in dance there's this kind of notion that there's a natural, essential, neutral body, and I kind of get a bit like, you know, shit, that's rubbish, and that I find that really, it sets up really problematic ideas, because if you don't conform to whatever that kind of body is, you're in trouble, sort of thing. So I think I've had this dodgy relationship with dance, and one of the ways I've dealt with that is by one of my greatest friends has been someone who's really dug into that and has written their PhD about that actually, and who I could have, who's a dancer and a choreographer, and who I could have really amazing conversations where they could talk to me about dance and politics. But I think I felt that when I started making movement pieces, you know, I was 40 and it felt like a bit of fun to, I mean, not silly, I don't mean in a trivial way, but it felt like what an amazing opportunity to have this freedom to work with movement, and that for a giggle, I wouldn't call it dance. I would try and keep my language, my expectations a lot more slippery, open, so I could just think about movement in different ways, because we make movement, all of us make movement all the time, like we were doing today in the workshop, you know. So when I make that statement, it's just a little way of acknowledging that there's a history that I also don't want to make assumptions about as well, but I don't want to pretend that I know or that I have the intimacy of those knowledges that dance scholars and dancers have. But I'm definitely in some kind of dialogue with it, which is really great. And I'm you know, like Florence Peake is someone who might well be someone I get to talk to about some of these. She's the kind of person I would bring these questions to and talk to. So the other thing to say is I started doing a bit of martial arts, and I just found it was another way for me to think about ideas. That the actual, I was particularly interested in grappling, so Brazilian jiu-jitsu and wrestling, and I got really into watching mixed martial arts, and also because where I was learning grappling was with a mixed martial arts coach, and I became good mates with two women who became professional mixed martial artists. And so the questions around bodies and gender and women being mixed martial artists were really amazing. And at the time when all this was happening, it was just when women were being invited to compete in the UFC, which is the ultimate, you know, forum for mixed martial arts in the world. So it seemed like women were finally being taken serious. And I was also having conversations with an amazing scholar called Jennifer Doyle, who's written a lot about sports and gender and how women are perceived still, how the kind of impositions of limits that are put on women. So she was writing about sports from a feminist and queer perspective, and oh my God, it was like we were just eating the most amazing rich chocolate cake all the time, the conversation. She even said, oh, no, I won't say that, actually, but about to say something discreet by accident and then realise we're being recorded. Nothing nasty, just a bit of little gossip. But she was fabulous, and I all that sort of sport, and I'd never been sporty my whole life, you know, it just didn't go with the dressing up and piercing and drugs, it just, you know, wasn't. So I've just kind of become fascinated with martial arts, combat sports, weightlifting, and also how they become a way of working with one's body. You know, again, this mutability, I discovered that weightlifting, one can also influence one's hormones. I'm menopausal, so actually really what I did start weightlifting, and I should continue because it's really helpful. At the moment, I'm not sure if I want to do any hormone replacement therapy. I'm very interested in a lot of the artworks that people are making at the moment with hormones, including things like estrogen activism, liberating estrogen from the environment, and then thinking about how can you do DIY open source estrogen. There's an artist called Mary Magic who's working with that a lot. God, there's good stuff there. But yeah, the sports stuff, so interesting. I didn't do any self-defense, but one of my friends is involved with doing kickboxing and self-defense and teaching it to women, and also being part of the kickboxing anti-fascism movement, which has got pretty big here in the UK and is now spread to Helsinki. So I just think how all these things interlink is completely fascinating. Or they do for me anyway. So when I'm working with, you know, in the gym, I'm sweating, I'm thinking about what's happening with the sweat, all the little, anyway, blah, blah, blah. I won't go on.
Thank you.
We're almost at 6 o'clock. Is there one last morsel of question? One little pipette, one little blood drop of question? Yes. Do you want a mic, darling? Oh.
Yes. Thank you, by the way, for leaving, for being, it's been so lovely. Thanks very much.
Yeah. You just mentioned your constitution, and you didn't say who that was or who you were talking about.
Oh, say that again. I can't hear you. It's a little phone.
You mentioned that you have a friend who talked about UK dance.
No, I'll happily mention them. But quite sad as well, a very good friend of Florence Peake's and mine, Doran George, who died before Christmas, British dance maker and choreographer, who moved to LA quite a few years ago and did a PhD, I think, with Susan Foster, who's a big figure in dance school. So Susan Foster's going to take Doran's PhD, and Doran's making it into a book, as people often do when they've done a PhD, so that's going to continue. So at some point, that book will be out, and Doran was basically trying to, I've just read the introduction, and it's basically setting up the PhD saying, you know, I'm a transgender northern person from New Yorkshire who was brought up with Marxism and anarchism, and then went to Arnhem to study dance, somatic practice, where there's this idea of, you know, politics and ideas around the body that Doran just didn't fit into. And so basically that's how Doran sets up the PhD, and I think when it's published it's going to be just amazing. And so Doran, I would just go talk to and say, why does everyone have to wear baggy sweatpants all the time and hug a tree? Why is that interesting? Why is that dance? And then Doran would laugh outrageously and then we would just start getting into the kind of, Don would explain and tell me about somatic practices and their histories and how they evolved, and a lot of that I was deeply sympathetic to, and we would talk about spectacle and anti-spectacle, but I felt that with Dara and I could kind of really say all the stuff that I wouldn't normally say to dance scholars, because maybe it would seem really rude because I was being quite disrespectful. So very special person. And you know, Doran started taking dance into performance art and making artworks that you would think of as performance art. There's little bits about their work online, very worth looking at. Very, very beautiful work. And actually, I don't need to keep plugging the book, but I was so thrilled that Doran's got two little bits of writing in the book, which is to do with conversations that we had. Yeah. Thank you for asking. Because sometimes I think, oh, I might cry if I say Don. But anyway, but thank you. I'm really glad that you asked me that. That was lovely. Yeah.
The fatal bell doth toll. 6 o'clock. I'll be going for a quick one at the tap with Kira before she gets her train. Anyone who wants to come and join us, have a drink and say hi. Please join us. Other than that, can we just thank Kira again for a very generous.